Our topic today is transcending individualism. Transcendence. The dictionary defines it as a state of being or existence above and beyond the limits of material experience. Above and beyond material experience, transcendence. The last 6 weeks have certainly been ones in which many in our society focused almost exclusively on material existence, haven't they? Since Thanksgiving, the Christmas shopping frenzy has monopolized newspaper inserts, online advertisements, shopping lists, and errand runs. The materialistic dash to get rid of cash has not yet stopped, since now is the season of returning gifts for even better ones or for the cash back we might really desire. In our Christmas season, one would think that we as a society would focus more on the spirit of giving and our sense of generosity, but yet we tend to, as a whole, become more selfish and territorial. We want the gifts that are on our list, no matter whom we might need to hit on the head at a Walmart with a small appliance to get them. Each person for themselves, so we can celebrate a peaceful Christmas, right? This individualism is extremely distorted during that shopping season, which is why I brought it up. Individualism, even during this supposed sacred holiday time, is typical of the American culture. It's also quite typical for UUs, Unitarian Universalists. The rise of transcendentalism and individualism in the mid-1800s was partly led by Unitarians like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Theodore Parker. Here we have transcendence again in the word transcendental movement. It was a matter of transcending beyond having to experience God only in church walls and having to listen to priests and other powers tell us how to find God, transcending beyond that. Wonderful, very applicable, and independence was important at that time. Later on, though, while many philosophers and theologians left behind the individualism of modernity and moved to a more humble, less secure, postmodern way of viewing the world, the American culture and some UUs are still at times quite wrapped up in determined individualism. Many cultures and beliefs do not even have individualism at their core or in their belief system at all. They may propose that we are really not as separate as we may seem based on our separate bodies. We have individual bodies, for sure. We have our own phone numbers and addresses and emails, our own set of friends and relatives, our own quirks, likes and dislikes, and weird habits. Don't know about you, I have a couple. But are we really all that separate? A lot of traditions in various spiritual paths would say no. Many would state that we are much more connected than our separate beings would indicate. They would propose that we share a universal consciousness or awareness and deep connection, or even the same divine core self with a capital S, or the same one, capital O, inside. The Tibetan Buddhist, the Dalai Lama, put it this way: however capable and skillful an individual may be, left alone, he or she will not survive. When we are sick or very young or very old, we must depend on the support of others. There is no significant division between us and other people because our basic natures are the same. If we wish to ensure everyone's peace and happiness, we need to cultivate a healthy respect for the diversity of our peoples and cultures, founded on understanding of this fundamental sameness of all human beings. The Zen Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh went even further, stating, "You are me, and I am you. It is obvious that we inter are. You cultivate the flower in yourself so that I will be beautiful. I transform the garbage in myself so that you do not have to suffer. I support you, you support me. I am here to bring you peace. You are here to bring me joy." Thich Nhat Hanh. One of my favorite books by Rumi, the Sufi mystic from the Muslim tradition, is titled "Say I Am You," and it includes a poem by that title and many writings that go along those lines. To speak of interconnectedness and oneness, my meditation teacher, Gurumayi Chitvilasananda, teaches, "Know the one in your own heart and you will understand the heart of each person. Know the one in your own mind and you will recognize the one in each person's mind. Know the one in your own life, then you will experience the one in everyone else's life." When you recognize divinity within yourself, then that is what you long to see in others, and due to that longing, that is what you're able to see in everyone else. Now, listen to this story. An anthropologist proposed a game to children in an African tribe. He put a basket of beautiful fruit near a tree and told the kids to run, and whoever reached the fruit first would get all of them. When he counted down and they ran, guess what they did? They held hands and all ran together and then sat around the basket and all enjoyed the fruit. When asked why they ran like that, where one could have easily taken all the fruit for themselves, they said, "Ubuntu. How can one of us be happy if the others are sad?" Ubuntu is a philosophy that many African tribes share, and it can be summed up as, "I am because we are." The Archbishop Desmond Tutu speaks a lot about this philosophy. He states, "Ubuntu speaks particularly about the fact that you can't exist as a human being in isolation. It speaks about our interconnectedness. You can't be human all by yourself. And when you have this quality, Ubuntu, you are known for your generosity. We think of ourselves far too frequently as just individuals separated from one another, whereas you are connected and what you do affects the whole world. When you do well, it spreads out. It is for the whole humanity. Ubuntu speaks of the very essence of a human being. We say he, so-and-so, has Ubuntu, and if you have Ubuntu, then you are generous, hospitable, friendly, caring, and compassionate. You share what you have. It is to say, my humanity is caught up, is inextricably bound up in yours. We belong in a bundle of life. We say a person is a person through other persons. A person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming others, does not feel threatened that others are able and good, for he or she has proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs to a greater whole. They are diminished only when others are humiliated or diminished, when others are tortured or oppressed or treated as if they were less than who they are." End of quote. Interconnectedness, interbeing, oneness. Now you may think that it's rather sweet for other cultures maybe, but certainly not for Americans, and hey, we are UUs. We're rebels at heart and we do whatever we each want. Individualism is part of Unitarian thought and history, and you are right. Giving ourselves permission to think for ourselves, especially in the 1800s, was essential and crucial. It helped spiritual thought diversify. It helped start movements that actually were anti-discrimination against various races, against women. There were Unitarians and Universalists heading up most of the anti-slavery movements and most of the anti-abolitionist movements and pro-women's votes movements all across this country and England. We were right in the forefront. And speaking up for individual rights was part of that. Speaking up against oppressive governments was essential. This, however, is another time. And one of the best talks I ever heard at a UU General Assembly, which is our annual meeting that happens in June, this one was in 2012. It addressed this. Just before any General Assembly starts, the ministers get together for a couple of ministry days. And there is this tradition that at the end of that, there is a Berry Street Lecture. This was started in 1820 with William Ellery Channing, one of our Unitarian forefathers, and has continued to this day. In 2012, the Berry Street Lecture was given by Reverend Dr. Fred Muir. He titled it, From I Church to Beloved Community. He made three points about Unitarian Universalism. He stated that if it is to survive another century or two way into the future and thrive, we need to rethink three main attitudes. One, our pervasive and disruptive commitment to individualism. Two, our exceptionalism. And three, our allergy to power and authority. Even though he himself became a Unitarian in his college years because of a love for transcendentalism and the writings of Emerson, Reverend Muir made it quite clear that this individualism no longer serves us in the UU community we live in today. Oh yes, our first principle is about individualism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I love that one, and you will hear me refer to it and preach about it from this pulpit again and again. But there are other principles. We have our commitment to compassion, acceptance, encouragement, the democratic process, world community, and the earth. They matter too. The principles and purposes of Unitarian Universalism conclude with this statement. As free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. Reverend Fred Muir states quite bluntly, we cannot do both covenant and individualism. He challenged the UUs of this decade and beyond to grow into a dynamic community which can support and sustain itself into the future. He then called us on exceptionalism. Yes, as UUs, we are quite different from many other churches, I know. And we like that difference, don't we? It's fine to know and love who we are, and at the same time, of course, the danger is to come across snobby or elitist, which would then keep us from working with other faith groups when it is time to do so. Finally, he calls UUs on having an allergy to power and authority. Oh, what a sweet way to express this rebel nature in our congregations. I wish I'd known that phrase when I was a teenager, because I've been a rebel all my life. But I could have just told my parents, I'm just allergic to power and authority. That would have been a nice line. We're just allergic. Oh, some of that allergy is A-okay. We don't want a pope, we don't want a priest, we don't want anyone telling us what we have to believe and adhere to. We don't want anybody to tell us how we have to run our churches either. That is great. That was settled a couple of hundred years ago in UU history, and we still hold on to that and live that out. But do we trust any authority? Can we appreciate any leadership, even in a democratically run church? Could it be a good thing to once in a while follow directions so we can achieve a goal together as a community? Can we trust our board to make good decisions without nitpicking and questioning every one of them? Can we trust our minister, our committee chair, or our regional staff? Questioning everything keeps us from getting things done, and it can tear communities apart. Let me give you a non-church-related example. Anytime there's a mandatory evacuation, be it due to floods or storms or fire, there are always some who stay behind, holding up in their homes, saying, I don't need to leave. I'm an individual. I make my own decisions. Individualism. Smart move? It usually takes major public resources to later rescue that person, if we're even able to, because some of them lose their lives. Can individualism go too far in these instances? There may be times where we need to just follow our chosen leaders to allow our communities and ourselves to be safe. When teenagers push against their parents' authority, we understand that they need to rebel some to get a sense of who they are as their own person. But over the last few years, I heard my growing teens share again and again about so many of their friends who were pregnant or dropping out of school or drinking too much or had OD'd on drugs. Not a helpful rebellion. Why don't they just paint their hair purple or put in too many piercings? There are plenty of times it's not advisable to rebel and fight authority. And then there are times when it helps to stand together and support one another and the leadership we have chosen. That is how I want to live in my life, my family, my community, with coworkers, and in this congregation I am honored to serve. I want to choose trust and cooperation whenever possible, and if there is something we as a group need to rebel against because there is injustice in this world, let's do it, and let's do it together. The question I want to ask myself is what I say and do really helping us to be in covenant with one another, to be a dynamic, accepting group on the road to one goal, a vital, beloved community? The term beloved community is an old one, but it was popularized by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It was not a utopian pie in the sky for him. He really wanted this. He said, our goal is to create beloved community, and this will require a change in our lives. Love is creative and redemptive. Love builds up and unites. Hate tears down and destroys. The aftermath of the fight with fire method is bitterness and chaos. The aftermath of the love method is reconciliation and creation of beloved community. Physical force can repress, restrain, coerce, destroy, but it cannot create and organize anything permanent. Only love can do that. Yes, love, which means understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill, even for one's enemies. That is the solution. Our ultimate end must be the creation of beloved community. Thanks, MLK. You can tell he used to go to UU churches as well. And our principles are certainly very compatible with all of what he says. Reverend Muir states, we cannot grow and deepen and share a healthy future when we distrust each other and our faith leaders so deeply. So the very things which set us apart as UUs, our courage to be independent congregationalists who question authority and do not buy into a common theology, those are the things which may end up harming us if we don't remember our reason for for being in community to begin with. In the words of Reverend Muir, what we need for a healthy future is the beloved community, a community of justice inside and beyond our congregations. Today, let us choose community and compassion over competition and individualism. Let us choose acceptance and respect over elitism and exceptionalism. Let us choose a reasonable level of trust in those we have empowered to lead us and support them so we can grow into beloved community in our congregation and way beyond these walls. Amen, so be it. Blessed be.